tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. The United States of America, in a time of global crisis, needs to reappraise exactly where we stand. What are we as we enter the bicentennial year? What do we wish to be? Where do we go from here? When you look at the soul, the spirit of America today, the division we see, not only the political scene of the faceless number of human individuals who seem to strive for the presidency, the total, almost complete public disenchantment with government, the suspicion there's no need to worry, nobody's honest, there's no need to worry, nobody in the White House of the last several, perhaps, generations has really, truly been an honest individual. The almost, at least to me, incredible exercise, especially by some of the more liberal Eastern publications and newsmen, of going about the business systematically of attempting to destroy even the memory of past presidents of the United States by revealing every conceivable innuendo concerning their personal private lives. The systematic tearing apart of the structures which allow a government to operate, at least abroad, to affect meaningful decisions involving far-reaching foreign policies which have to do with ultimate national security. And yet we in this country are playing some strange game of desiring to so wash our own linen in the eyes of the rest of the world so we can prove to the world that we in the United States are of all people most righteous, of all people most introspective, of all people most soul-searching, and most desirous of proving to the entirety of the world the true magnanimity of the American spirit of freedom, of government, of, for, and by the people, that we need to reveal every conceivable innuendo of misconduct on the part of any government, bureaucracy, or agency, or individual, and then let the public be the judge. There's quite an interesting commentary that came from a leading British newspaper in the form of an editorial in the Daily Telegraph for Saturday, January 3rd, 1976, that I've just got to pass on to you. This is what the British people feel about it. At least this was an editorial in a leading newspaper, so you'd assume certain people agree with it. Its headline is America Going Mad. It is time America's friends spoke out, said the editorial, with some nasty questions to the so-called liberal East Coast establishment. By that we mean sections of the press, sections of Congress, television commentators and comedians, university pundits, and a lot of other people who may think there is a dollar to be made out of denigrating their country's institutions and leaders. We all know about the trauma of Vietnam and Watergate, but it's getting a bit boring. How long has the rest of the free world got to put up with these tender-minded people recovering from their trauma? Indefinitely? Asked the editorial in the Daily Telegraph. America is accustomed to, it goes on, and is merited a good deal of deference from her allies. But deference can be a disservice. The United States should know that her European cousins and allies are appalled and disgusted by the present open disarray of her public life. The self-criticism and self-destructive tendencies are running mad. No countervailing force in sight. She has no foreign policy anymore, they said in this editorial in this British newspaper. No foreign policy anymore because Congress will not allow it. Her intelligence arm, the CIA, is being gutted and rendered inoperative, the names of its staff being published so they can be murdered. Her president and secretary of state are being hounded, not for what they do, but simply because they are people there, to be pulled down for the fun of it. They concluded in this editorial in the Daily Telegraph in Britain, final paragraph, "We hope and believe that the vicious antics of the liberal East Coast establishment, which are doing all this untold harm, do not reflect the feelings of the mass of the country. But it is a matter for wonder. Is the country as a whole becoming deranged? Surely not. Perhaps the presidential election later this year will clear the air. Yet that is still 11 months away, and in the meantime, there is all the campaigning to be gone through." And then they finally concluded, "Please, America." Then they said, "For God's sake, pull yourself together." End of editorial. Now, we editorialize about Britain. I do so on this program a great deal because of the dismantlement of empire, the loss of prestige and status, and the incredible picture of strikes The total fiscal chaos, the abominable runaway inflation, the attacks upon the pound, and the continual devaluation of it to hover near $2. The feather bedding, the three-day work week, the almost indomitable will of the British people to pull down their own government and their own country instead of saving themselves to be the once proud, imperturbable Rock of Gibraltar, to stand there, immovable, and to protect the rest of the world in that sense from would-be anarchists or despots who would enslave the entirety of humankind. So I think maybe it's time the British were able to editorialize a little bit about us. I have felt free to editorialize and to comment about what's happening in Britain because I feel free to do that about what's happening inside the United States. And I do not speak as either a chauvinist, a racist, a politician, or from any party point of view, but from a complete overview, looking at the world as a whole, and the United States in particular, and our present course in a global community of nations. I have decried this, what I call insane self-righteousness of washing our linen in front of the eyes of the world, because even though this may be the way, some very sensitive-minded people or the sob sisters, the crying, hand-wringing, handkerchief-squeezing people who just cannot abide the idea there may have been some inordinate evil at one time or another in the White House. Maybe that's the way they approach it. I just cannot really see that we are going to gain anything in the global arena of nations by washing our laundry and our linen and hanging it out our own windows to dry for all of the rest of the world to see when this world admires leadership. It actually, believe it or not, is looking for a strong leader. Witness the very fact of the catastrophic dislocation of world government. Of the year 1975, a year of almost ceaseless summitry, of leaders going back and forth, of the toppling of governments, of the emergence of many despotic governments, many new totalitarian states emerging in country after country. And people in governments and countries different from ours who reason differently, believe it or not. The Oriental mind is truly different from that of the United States and Britain. Minds of people in Europe and other countries actually function differently. That is, certain stimuli in the form of education, the environment, heredity, and all those things that shape and make human personality, human character, can be molded in such a fashion so as to make the entire meaning of democracy very much obscure and like a foreign concept that is virtually meaningless to billions of human minds. There are people living right now on this same earth with us for whom, believe it or not, as anathema as it sounds, for whom, in their present generation, given all the background, the teaching, or the lack of it, for whom, democracy just wouldn't work. Now, of course, that sounds like a statement that is just absolutely wrong to many people. Until you really think about it. Until you think of the unbelievable poverty, the squalor, the misery, the wretchedness, sickness, and disease, especially the illiteracy and the fact the government of the people, for and by the people, where the people elect their own leaders, but where you're talking about tribalism, witchcraft, where you're talking of complete illiteracy, where you're talking daily staring starvation in the face on the part of many emerging African states, then the whole concept of democracy is absolutely unworkable, I said, at least given all the inputs of past generations, illiteracy, poverty, and all the rest, unless or until a complete re-education process could occur, which might take literally two or more generations. Now it's time we in the United States in our bicentennial year began to wonder about where we go from here. We are, at least in some areas, tenuously, hesitantly, I'm still able to say, number one. Holding not in shipbuilding, we were number 14, 13, or 15, depending upon which year it was in the last 10 years that you checked. Not necessarily in every aspect of the space race, though in most. Not necessarily in having the biggest, the most sophisticated, the most powerful, the most modern navy. Now the Soviet Union has to pass us in that. Not necessarily in the biggest missiles, delivering the heaviest multi-megatonnage, but nevertheless in the most sophisticated ones, we still maintain the lead. We're number one in standard of living for the largest raw number of people, but we're not number one in a proportionate basis, because you'd have to look now over to the nation of Kuwait, or Kuwait as they call it, in the Persian Gulf, to find the one country where, on a per capita basis, they are the most affluent and the richest of any country on the face of the earth. But without belaboring it, with the entirety of our industrial base, the natural resources, the raw materials, the verdant beauty of our agricultural areas, with the potential of the United States, we are nevertheless still, in so many very vital areas, number one. Do we want to retain that position, or do we really, sincerely want to be number two, or three, or seven, or 30? Because we are facing a test of the spirit right now in our bicentennial year. Or we have been for some time. We have entered a period of testing for the nation as a whole. We are being weighed in the balances just as surely as were ancient empires and kingdoms. We are being plumbed, probed, investigated. We are being judged. There is one who says he is the creator of heaven and earth, who says he gives us every breath of air we breathe, who says to him all nations are as a drop in a bucket, that they're counted as the dust of the balance, nothing in his sight. That one great being who claims to be the author of the Bible, of using human minds and human personalities, he was able to inspire. And in that book he has placed many a challenge, many a command, many a law, statute, judgment, and many a prophecy. They're simple cause and effect. They're simple right and wrong. They're simple hazard and benefit. In that great pronouncement in the 40th chapter and other chapters of the book of Isaiah, where that one great personage who reveals himself as the creator who made all things, talking about nations here below, reveals the point that it is God, not man, or the armies of men, who sets up and deposes kings, emperors, rulers, presidents, that he is the one who decides who will rule on this earth here below. Oh, most people wouldn't ever say, that is true. I know now all of a sudden I short-circuited the conversation because suddenly I dare to mention a name which is only mentioned in cursing, in bar rooms, or maybe in common conversation on the golf course by many Americans, millions. But nevertheless, in the 40th chapter of the book of Isaiah is a great challenge to all of humankind, just wondering whether or not you've heard, whether you have known, whether it hasn't been told you from the very beginning of your consciousness. Why is it we have not understood there is a great creator God? He says, in asking with whom it is we will compare his greatness, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, verse 12 of Isaiah 40, and he did out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, or the hills in balance? Who has directed the spirit of the eternal, or being his counselor, has taught him? With whom took he counsel? And who instructed him and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed to him the way of understanding? Can you really explain in your own mind law without a lawgiver, life without a life giver, life producing life of the pre-existing same identical kind without someone to sustain it? Can you understand the two laws of thermodynamics, really? Can you decipher the distance between one star and the other? The measurement of time is according to the travel of various astral bodies, including our own Earth and our own solar system in one tiny corner of one vast galaxy, which is apparently as near as they can guess, so huge it consists of more than 200 billion, billion stars, many of which, or of whom, whichever way you would like to say it, are much greater in size than our own sun, which is only an orange dwarf. Can you really comprehend it? This chapter of the Bible says you cannot. It says we continually are knocking our heads against finite limits, and yet we are dealing with an infinite universe. And a great creator being that had the power to put it all there. He talks about the universe and about nations that are counted as nothing. In verse 15, is a drop of a bucket counted as the small dust of the balance. Nations, great collections, families, tribes of human beings grown large into a political entity ruled over by some kind of a government called a nation. He says in verse 17, all nations before him are as nothing. They are counted to him less than nothing, vanity. He asks in verse 25, to whom will you liken me? Or shall I be equal? Saith the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high. Get your eyes up. Take a look at the universe, at the solar system, at the good earth on which you live, at your own heart, your lungs, your five senses, your body, your lifespan, and the most precious possession you've got, your mind. And ask why you exist. Why are you here? Where are you going? Why are you alive? He asks for us to get our eyes up, to look up, and to wonder who created all these things. In the first chapter of the book of Romans is the statement that you can know about the God family, the Godhead, the divinity of God, Father and Son, and therefore about the plan of God, by studying the work He has produced, His handiwork, creation. It says the mysterious, the hidden, the unseen things of God are known by the things which are seen, by looking at that which is made, at the material universe. It's too bad more scientific studies cannot present both sides of the picture. While many of them do, and while it is not fair to say that by any means are all scientists atheists, some few of them are. Many of the top scientists in the world, including those in the space program, including the inventor of the original V2 rocket, Dr. Wernher von Braun, and so many other men who have probed so deeply into the secrets of the universe, into some of the laws governing our own physical habitat, this wonderful, marvelous earth on which we exist, who have looked into the cleavage properties of minerals, who have looked into the laws that govern the interaction and interrelationship between various living organisms, the symbiosis of one completely, totally separate and yet completely different creature, such as a plant and an animal, two separate animals, insects, microorganisms, and animals, each unable to survive without the very special apparatus and very special character and nature of the other, yet surviving quite nicely together. There are those scientists who, looking into these puzzles, these vast mysteries, these unanswerable questions of the physical material earth and the universe, have come to the only inescapable conclusion that there is a God. Now, what is it our ultra-liberal establishment would like to accuse our forebears and our forefathers of being? Dupes? Ignorant? Superstitious? Oh, I know that when people want to talk about the founding fathers, they're very quick to say George Washington was a slave owner. Yes, we'd like to undress our public officials, and we'd like to rip and tear at the very founding blocks and the building blocks of our free society. We would like to take the very trunk of the tree of the United States and, in a frenzy of ultra-liberal self-righteousness, slash and hack and see it destroyed and disintegrated and build up into something new. Back during the heyday, the student demonstrations and the riots that tore apart 65 American cities in the late 1960s, with the infamous group of whom you hear almost nothing anymore, of the student agitators, whom, as I said at that time, would ultimately grow up, and they did. Some of them are balding, 40-ish, and getting the pop these days, and you hear nothing from them any further. But back during that time, everybody wanted a revolution. As one would-be revolutionary said when he was asked by reporters, well, what kind of a program do you propose? What nation, what government, what system would you propose to put in place of the system you seek to destroy? He said, unprintable, the programs. Let's have the revolution, and then we'll worry about programs. That seems to be what is happening in Lebanon these days. Let's kill each other, say the Christians and the Muslims, and now the Palestinians who jump in the middle of the fray. So we killed 70 here, and 100 there, and 500 the other place, and 1,000, and 2,000 more. By the time we're all through killing, and those that are still left alive stand around and look in bewildered wonderment at all the smoldering shards of a completely destroyed society and civilization, with crumbled, burnt, blackened buildings, with commerce, industry, business, what little bit of it there was in the first place, at a complete standstill, everybody reduced to absolute poverty, back to a barter system, 3 camels for your daughter, this pair of shoes for your pack of cigarettes. They'll look around in bewilderment, and the survivors will seek to pick through the rubble to decide who is in charge here. Who is going to rule? Who will be the great leader? Because when it gets right down to it, the swelling toadish ego of human beings who see themselves in the role of a god is what it's all about. The desire for power, the desire for status, the desire for fame, for recognition, for the aplomb and approbation, and especially the worship of other human beings is what drives them on. That vanity, which is satanic, which actually brought about the disintegration and destruction of the world which then was, as the Bible speaks of, an earlier creation which was beautiful and fabulous, and brought about the whole era in which we live of resentment and rebellion toward government, which is now in full sway, according to the Bible, that spirit that even now works in the children of disobedience, which is a spirit that is, quote, not afraid to speak evil of dignities, end quote, seems to rule not only in religion, among and between various political entities, but even in the press and the media. It seems to be an almost vicious pastime. If it stands for something good, let's tear it down. If it stands for honesty, integrity, government, leadership, values of any kind, let's destroy it. If it's good, let's make it bad. If it's white, let's paint it black. But it seems we are indulged today in a vicious introspection, tearing apart the very fiber of our being, the very beginning of the bicentennial celebration, where we edge closer towards July 4th, 1976. 200 years later, what is it we're going to accuse them of, really? Those founding fathers who said they believed in God. How are we going to satisfy the perpetrators of the separation of every last vestige of religious consciousness and belief in God from our day-to-day social life? We want the word God taken out of the salute to the flag, the national anthem, off the coins and bills. We want acknowledgement of God, obedience to God, consciousness of God, responsibility toward God, obliterated from our educational process. What are we going to accuse the men who themselves, with their own life's blood, gave that we could be where we are today in the community of nations? Were they duped? Were they ignorant? Were they deceived? Were they fools? What is it we will hear from the poisoned pen of some of those ultra-liberal journalists who would undress every public official they can find in public and wash our dirty linen in front of the eyes of the world, including the publishing of some of those men whose lives are so dedicated to their country they have given their lives in public service, even to live abroad, at great trepidation and fear and great expense of their wives, their families, and themselves, to live a double life of cloak and dagger secrecy because of the essential character of one country such as ours in a quest for survival in a world filled with tigers. What, when a man comes home from a normal affair of state in a foreign government to be met by the fusillade of machine gun bullets as he steps out of his car? Are we then the more righteous? Are we satisfied? Because we don't have any spies. We don't have any secrets. We don't play games abroad. Far be it from us to interfere in the internal affairs of another country. Let me tell you, American citizens, let's all hear it for the citizens of France. In 1773, 4, 5, and 6. Let's hear it for those people in France. Because either they were stupid or uninformed, but they didn't have a government that believed in the self-righteous exercise of at all costs staying out of the internal affairs of another country. Or we, in the United States, would never have come into existence. There were so many ways in which the French government directly helped the American revolutionary cause. Study your history, and just think in retrospect how wonderful it is that some of the nations of Europe, particularly France, during the time of the birth in the blood of its forebears, the United States of America became a reality, and documents we hallow as having virtual religious prestige. The Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, were put to pen and ink by a group of men that I suppose some of us today want to call dupes or ignorant because they said they believed in God. and they founded a nation based on the principles of freedom and equality, which we are still striving to realize and has not yet been realized for every individual American citizen, regardless of race, color, creed, or sex. We're still on the way towards striving to fulfill some of the basic concepts those men saw over 200 years ago. The real test of a nation is its character. Not its industrial base, not its gross national product, nor the size of its army, not its nuclear capacity. The test of a nation is the test of its character. And in the United States of America, unless we get character, unless we know where to go find it, unless we return to a consciousness of God and a responsibility toward that God, of a tender Christian conscience, of the morality to realize and recognize the difference between right and wrong, good and evil, unless we return to the concept of the Ten Commandments, of love toward God and love toward neighbor, then we as a country are surely going down the drain. We are surely, as a country, diminishing in our role in world conditions to become number 2, 3, 10, 47, or simply gone. I think it's time to reflect as we enter the period of bicentennial celebration. About the land of the free and the home of the brave, are we brave enough to stay free? I want you to write for the current number of the Plain Truth because there's a very special article on Does America Still Stand for Anything? The first one from my father on the key to human survival in this current number of the Plain Truth. I want you to do one thing, if you will, and that's tell us the call letters of the radio station to which you're listening and get the current number of the Plain Truth, the article, Will Russia Rule the Waves on the Growing Might of the Soviet Navy? The article on a fundamental decision, Europeans Agree on Parliament and Common Passport, the move toward an impending United States of Europe, an article covering that in the current number. Many parliaments have had the first step of the breakup of the United Kingdom. The World Watch column by Gene Hogberg, director of our news bureau, As in the Days of Noah, and the improbability of what you see in the world today in the light of ancient history. Write for the current number of the Plain Truth. We'll get it in the mail to you as quickly as we receive your letter. There's never any bill to follow. We would like to know the call letters of the station to which you're listening, the name of this radio station, and then we'll get your Plain Truth in the mail as quickly as we can. You send your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request, along with the call letters of this station, to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.